Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Show, the Derek Hunter Podcast, for the 29th of April, 2024, second to last day of April. You've been good, April. You've been good. Happy Monday to you. Man, we've got a lot of stuff to get to. Don't forget about patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Support the program, get the extra stuff, contests, the week in effing review, all sorts of goodies over there, and just a sense of community. Check it out. S'il vous plaît. All right. I want to get started because I hate Mondays. Let's get this going. There is a lot going on. The protests raging, the anti-Semites on campus going crazy. Good Lord. I never really cared enough to take to the streets for something. In college, especially. Could you imagine what these people are ending up doing when they look back at their lives? Because what does everybody say? It's not really true, although with miserable piles of human flesh like these people, it might be true that, you know, the college was the best years of my life. College was a lot of fun, but I've had a lot of fun pretty much all. There was a reason when I got married in 2015. Like, my friends, like, you're going to have a, going to have a bachelor party? And I said, no. Like, what do you mean you're not going to have a bachelor party? My whole life to that point had been a bachelor party. I didn't need a bachelor. One last hurrah. Like, if I look at it that way, it'd be like, oh, man, I'm really going to miss going out and getting hammered with my friends every night. It's going to be terrible. I'm not going to be able to pick up any more chicks. Blah, blah, blah. Like, no, it's enough. It's enough. I didn't need a bachelor party. Been to enough of the bachelor parties, I've been to enough of the places where bachelor parties occur, that I didn't need to go again. I'd kind of had enough. Enough. You look back at college, it was a lot of fun. You did learn some things, not a whole lot that came in handy, but the piece of paper. But these mutants who are out there camping and doing, I don't know, whatever, I would never mindlessly repeat what somebody said for me to say back to them because it totally cedes my sovereignty to them. We are all individuals. We are the damn Zionists and everything. And you just sit there and you go, what is the mentality of somebody who would do this? And then when you grow up, you look back and you go, God, I got suspended from school. I got expelled from school. I got whatever. It took me longer. And for what? What did I accomplish? Nothing. Because honestly, even if you believe in Israel is evil and all the sweet, nourishing Hamas people are just being bombed by Israel for no good reason. There's a genocide going on. Do you honestly think any human being over there involved in the decision-making process goes, well, I'm not sure. I'm ready to make a move in what I think is the best move for our country, but there's a whole bunch of 20-year-old whiny leftists who wish us dead on Columbia's campus camping that have a different opinion, so it's causing me to rethink. Do you really think there's somebody out there going, I don't make a move until I find out what's going on at USC? What's the mood at USC? Nobody does. Nobody does, except for the administrators of these universities who should all honestly be fired. There are some universities out there that are doing it right. You can't camp out here on campus. Oh, well, we're going to do, nope, here come the police. They sweep clean the area. You're a bunch of fascists. No, there are rules. Fascism would be the rules not applying to everybody. If there's a student group that does get to set up camps on campus, put up tents, keep Coleman in business, cook on grills, and they're fine. You, on the other hand, if you know, sit there and say, hey, we need lower taxes and Joe Biden's terrible, you can't do that. You no way, no how, no whatever. No, the rules apply to everybody. Fascists were above the rules. Communists were above the rules. That's why they believe they should get above the rules. Plus, they've also been brainwashed into thinking what they're doing is somehow righteous, which it is not. But that's for another story. They genuinely believe they are doing, I would say, the Lord's work, but they don't believe in that. They believe in government. They believe they're doing Greta Thunberg's work. She is their God now. But you just watch all of these people and you go, you realize that you're going to regret this one day. You're going to have missed out on things. You're going to set back your career. You're going to set back your life. You're going to end up in a situation where you are up for a job that you really desperately want. And just for fun, they're going to search your name, and there's going to be your mugshot. Or there's going to be you screaming into a camera with your name attached to it that Zionists need to die, that Israel from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. It's an 80% favorable thing in your world as it currently exists, because your world as it currently exists constitutes, what, maybe 5 dorm rooms in your hallway and a couple of your classes. And now the immediate area of your little camp dumbass out there. But the world is bigger than that. As you watch and you guys revel in seeing people canceled because 10 years ago somebody had said something horrible, or a teenager had tweeted something like, oh, let's get blood in the water, or that one woman who was actually on your team, the liberal, was flying to South Africa and said, oh, geez, going to South Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white. With a couple hundred followers, thought she was making a stupid joke to her friends, and by the time she landed, you'd ruined her life. The sense of satisfaction you get knowing that you had helped damage a human being you would never meet's life, a human being whose existence would never impact you in any way, shape, or form, and you ruined her life, and there's so many of them, and the fact that it didn't cause people like these people in these quads to recoil in horror at what they'd done, at what they'd become, but instead seemed to sexually arouse them, turn them on to this, is disgusting. So we've got a whole bunch of audio to play for you to make these, to expose who these people are and the mindset that they have and the destruction that they bring. They don't care about the destruction that they bring. It's, look, if somebody's Columbia, going to Columbia, the odds are fairly high that their family's wealthy. So ultimately, they don't really care. They'll grow out of it. Maybe their parents will disinherit them, and then they'll suddenly care. But right now, they don't care. But you should be made aware of it, because God forbid you ever come in contact with these people or find yourself in a position where you might be able to hire one of them. You should know how to act accordingly. I want to play you USC. I didn't even think of it in these terms. USC out there in California. I swear, I was promised that whole state was going into the ocean. Where's the big one? The whole premise of, wasn't it Superman 1 where Lex Luthor lit off a nuclear bomb and set off the San Andreas Fault and caused most of California to, they didn't have the special effects budget then, but that was, I thought, what was going on, is that California was falling into the ocean. Whatever the case, it happened in the movie 2012. I was promised as a child that the San Andreas Fault, it was sitting on a continental shelf, and sooner or later the whole thing is just going to break off and go into the ocean, and I'd been waiting for it, and it hasn't happened. I feel kind of ripped off, honestly. But USC out there, since it's still above water, USC has canceled their graduation this year. It's 2 weeks away. Why? Because they can't guarantee the safety. They can't protect the people from the angry mutant mob out there. And so they will not be holding a mass graduation. There can be smaller things, the individual schools, but not the whole big. It's not a big deal to me. I did not attend my college graduation. I didn't see the point in it. I didn't care to. I just wanted the piece of paper which they mailed to me. But people were like, what do you mean you're not going to go? I don't care. I'm just not that guy. And so it didn't matter to me. I don't know who spoke at my graduation. A school like USC is going to do a hell of a lot better as far as the commencement address speaker than my school did. We've probably got some homeless guy telling you how to get crack or how to spot fake drugs or something. But USC, you get somebody famous, somebody known. But they're going to cancel it. And a girl took to her TikTok account, because I didn't think about this. It's 2024 graduation. Go back 4 years, which is, you know, most people do college in 4 years. You don't have to, but you can do it in three if you really wanted to. You go back 4 years. What year is that? That's 2020. That is the year of COVID. Their graduation was canceled or dramatically curtailed, depending on where they were, unless they lived in a free state like Florida when they could go and graduate. But this girl took to her TikTok account and talked about it. I didn't make that connection. She's been twice screwed out of, she's been screwed out of every graduation she ever gets. And unless she goes to grad school, she will never have, although now they sort of, oh, it's kindergarten graduation. It's first grade. It's not. You're just moving up. Real graduations. It's not even talking like, well, we went to elementary school. Now we're going to go to junior high. We need to have a graduation ceremony. That's for the parents. That's not a real graduation. High school graduation, college graduations are real graduations. And the kids at USC are getting screwed out of it completely. So I wanted to play you this TikTok because this girl makes a pretty compelling case that these very small minority of leftist mutants, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, which is in full and total dripping venomous contempt, they have screwed a lot. I tell you, never underestimate the amount of damage a small group of committed people can do. They have screwed everybody out of their graduation. And it's also the horrible administration who allows this boiled fester on campus.
So USC just canceled our graduation. I have no words. Like, this is so, like, it's actually comical at this point. If you don't know, the seniors that are graduating college right now are the seniors that graduated in 2020, where we didn't have a high school graduation, and a lot of us had, like, drive-through fake graduations or no graduation at all. And now we are seniors about to graduate, getting ready for our first real graduation, and it just got canceled. I I'm in shock right now. We, as a whole senior class, have never had a real graduation because of COVID first, which we thought was like a one-time thing. Like, we're the class that got screwed over. It is what it is. Unlucky. Now, USC just canceled it. And of course, USC, we've all worked so hard to get here. USC, I'm sure you know, is not an easy school to get into. And so everyone that goes here is very accomplished, like had worked really hard to get in, and now they just canceled our freaking graduation. Like, what now? What now? They sent out an email 10 minutes ago about how they know it's disappointing, but they're canceling it, and they're going to have other fun events, which I don't even know what that means. Like, I understand that, like, a lot has been going on at USC right now with, like, protests and everything. I just feel like there could have been a different way to go about this than to cancel the entire graduation for a class that never even got a high school graduation either. Here's the part of the email right there that says, as a result, we will not be able to host the main stage ceremony that traditionally brings 65,000 students, families, and friends to our campus at the same time and during a short window from 8:30 to 10 a.m. We understand this is disappointing. Bullshit. Like, come on. If you would have told me 10 years ago that I would graduate high school and not have a graduation, get into USC, go all 4 years at USC and not have a graduation, I would have been like, what? Like, that doesn't make sense. But it happens, and now this is all of our seniors' lives. So, this sucks. I mean, this sucks. I just had my last class ever, and right after I should be celebrating, just got the news that we have no graduation. So, now all my roommates are depressed, and we all literally were just sitting in the living room, like, in tears, but not much we can do about it, so we're gonna make the most of it, but ridiculous. Sucks.
Now, I don't know what this girl majored in. I don't know what she wants to be when she grows up, but somebody should hire her immediately because her attitude is absolutely what you'd want. It would not be my attitude. She said BS once. My little video would be nonstop obscenities, just a string of nonstop obscenities. But it really falls on the administration, the failures of the administration to stand up to these people. And this is nothing new. This is the end result. This is Frankenstein's monster returning to the castle to destroy it. It always happens. It always happens. You have, oh, Ann Coulter's coming to campus. Why? A legitimate student group invites Ann Coulter to come to campus. Okay. And what does the school do? Well, we're not going to provide security. You're going to have to pay $500,000 insurance bond in order to get security and blah. Wait, why? Why? Well, because she is a provocative guest and it's going to upset some students. Okay, and then they show up and they yell and they scream and they disrupt. Some will try to storm the stage. They will bring bells. They will bring bullhorns. And what does the administration say? Well, you know, the students do have a First Amendment right. Realistically, they should just say, well, look, we as an administration, I'm a liberal. I don't like Ann Coulter. So I don't really care if she gets shouted down. And that's great. It's all fun and games when Frankenstein is ravaging the village you don't like. But when he comes back to the castle, then suddenly you have no moral standing to say, hey, you can't do that. Hey, stop knocking that over. Hey, stop starting fires. Stop all of this stuff. You have no ground on which to stand when you do that. And you also don't have the tools. You don't have the ability. You don't have the moral. The part of parenting, part of being an adult, part of leading is having a little bit of moral standing. You can't lecture your kid or you caught your kid smoking a cigarette, drinking a beer, and you can't do that. It's wrong. It's bad. You shouldn't be doing it. Why, you've got a Marlboro hanging out of your mouth and, a can of Pabst. It's by example that you lead too. It's more important, actually. What you say matters as long as what you say matters. If it's situational, then what you say doesn't matter. It's situational. You got two kids. One's adopted, and the other one is like a mini you, and you go, oh, yeah, Billy, good job, kid. Hey, Tony, yeah, you did fine. Whatever. You don't treat them differently. You treat them the same. And for years, these leftist administrators have been treating people differently on campus. Not cheering. They know nobody will stand up and say, oh, we're really glad that you firebombed the Starbucks on campus, because Ann Coulter was speaking. Nobody says that. Well, it's unfortunate. And this is just sort of what happens when you bring in unfortunate people on college campuses. What you're doing there is saying we approve without saying we approve. You can tisk-tisk and wink and kind of give them a little jab on the shoulder going, yeah, good job. You should have done that, Billy. You shouldn't have pushed Grandma down the stairs, but we all know that I'm the main beneficiary in the will. So, I mean, nice work there, sort of thing. And now you're screwing over everybody. Now when you say, hey, you can't do that here, you have no moral standing. You've let them get away with much worse. You've excused them from getting away with much worse. You've cheered them. Hell, you might have even marched with them at certain times during the summer of, the sainthood ascension of George Floyd. Hallowed be thy name, crack-smoking junkie. You marched with them. Once you've broken the glass, broken the seal on the concept, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. Not without decisive action. You were not hired for decisive action, these university presidents. Most of them were hired because they were box checkers and they were good fundraisers. Look at this. You would think, hey, academia, they care about, well, academics. They don't. They don't. University presidents are a lot like the presidents of think tanks and nonprofits. You think, well, they're involved in the day-to-day. No, they're not. They're out there kissing the butts of donors, trying to get more money. That's the job. That is nothing against it. The job is important. It employs a lot of people. But that's the job. A university president, they set the rules, but they don't really enforce. They never thought they'd have to enforce them. They never thought Frankenstein's monster would find his way back to the castle. It's way up there on the mountaintop. There are so many. Donald Trump still exists. Why aren't they running down to New York to protest outside the courthouse in trial about how he needs to be strung up and murdered or whatever they want to do? Because honestly, what are these people? This is a testament to just how suggestive young unformed minds are, that you think that, well, if I camp in a $500 Coleman tent for a week and demand a university divest itself from Israel when you couldn't even explain how it invests itself in Israel, you have no idea, and you demand peace, that somehow you can get peace. The left has always been this kind of stupid. I'm trying to think of a better word for it. But if you know your history of the 1960s, the anti-war protests, a group of hippies surrounded the Pentagon and firmly believed that by holding hands and concentrating and chanting and singing that they could levitate the building. They did. Now, most of them probably didn't really think it was going to work, but they went anyway because, you know, the hive needs drones to do whatever they're told. But they literally surrounded the Pentagon. We're going to levitate the Pentagon. It's such a stupid idea. And do what with it? If you could, what are you going to do with it? Are you Magneto? Are you going to put it around the White House and have a chat with Nixon about what to do next about Vietnam? Or no? There are kids out there. They're not kids. They're adults. There are adults, not fully formed, the full frontal cortex has yet to emerge and may never. We don't know what hormones they're on. They have, they believe they are making a difference in the world. They believe that they can enzyme and that they can bring about a Palestinian state. They don't realize or know or care, they're blinded by hatred, that in 1997, Bill Clinton offered them one. Bill Clinton offered them a Palestinian state, all of Gaza, most of the West Bank, even extending parts of the West Bank into East Jerusalem, because they wanted all of Jerusalem. They're not going to get Jerusalem. They wanted all of Jerusalem. They said, no, we'll extend the borders of Jerusalem. We'll then extend the borders of the West Bank. We'll get you that part. It was 95 to 97% of what they wanted. And self-governing. You'd be your own country. Not a sovereign part of Israel. Their own country. The United States was set to recognize them. And Yasser Arafat turned it down. Not because he hated Jews. Yasser Arafat was a hypocrite. Yasser Arafat was a criminal. How can you say that? Well, aside from the fact that he was a terrorist, he was also a criminal in that his daughter now lives in Europe, his only child, who has never held a job in her life. She is a billionaire. That's how I can say that. The people of the Palestinian people, when Yasser Arafat was alive, were having all sorts of trouble. Oh, they were deprived of this, that. Yasser Arafat was filthy rich. He smuggled his money into Switzerland. Nobody seemed to care. Even when it was found out, they didn't care. They hate Jews more than they hate being ripped off. Talk about brainwashing. So yeah, Arafat's daughter lives in Switzerland with her $1 billion. She'll never have to work a day in her life. It's not like she was an early angel investor into Facebook or something. It's straight up stolen money. Straight up stolen money. And stolen from the people they care so deeply about. And nobody cares. The leaders of Hamas now live in Qatar in a 5-star resort. You can't tell me there aren't prostitutes coming in and out of there on a daily basis. They're filthy rich. And they're talking about a famine in Gaza. Nobody's opening up their wallets in Qatar to go, we need to send food. They don't care. Everything old is new again, and everything new is old again with the left. We'll levitate the Pentagon. We'll do this. You don't understand. This doesn't matter. These adults are going to realize one day that they wasted a good chunk of their lives when the Pentagon doesn't fly over their heads, when they go to get a job and can't find one. It's going to be. I wish we'd live stream that. I kind of want to laugh at that. They really are sort of a tornado just whirling their way through campus. And I really do have to wonder what these people think they're going to accomplish. What do they think they're going to accomplish? Honestly, we want to divest. We don't want to fund genocide. We don't want to. First of all, it's not genocide. Get a dictionary, all right? Spare me. Don't use Wikipedia to determine what is and is not genocide. Do yourself and the world a favor. Secondly, even if you hate Israel, knock yourself out. I don't care. How do you suppose that somebody can fully divest themselves from anything that has anything to do with any country, honestly? Do you understand how international finance works or international subsidiaries and all? You'll never find it all because it doesn't even know where it is half the time. It's such a stupid concept that these people are out there protesting on behalf of. And the university presidents let it go. There's a difference. Down in Texas, the schools have already cracked down. Boom, get out of there. Tennessee, get out of there. No, we're not doing this. This isn't a camping place. It's against the rules. It's against the law. Camper, no, we're not letting you set this up. At Columbia, they go, well, we've got 48 hours to make sure. Okay, well, we're making progress in our negotiations. Therefore, we're going to extend it even longer. Why? You control everything. You have the right. You are in the right. I promise you, if it was a pro-life takeover, they'd have called in the SWAT team. They would have been rappelling from low-flying helicopters to get these people out of there. But the left has fear of their radical fringe, and rightly so. They're a violent group of horrible creatures. You can be a liberal Democrat and not be fully of the left. These are the people who wear masks and throw bricks at police. These are the people they celebrated as mostly peaceful because, you know, you can't throw a brick constantly in between throwing one brick and loosening your arm up to be able to throw another brick, you're peaceful. And throwing a brick, the act of throwing a brick, only takes about a second. Whereas reloading, reacquiring another police officer target, that takes, you know, it can take up to a minute. So for 59 seconds, you were peaceful. So in that minute, you were absolutely mostly peaceful. It just doesn't matter that it was bookended by you trying to throw a brick at a cop. That sort of thing. It's all well and good when your mob is attacking your enemies. See, the brown shirts were super loyal to Hitler and the Nazis. Man, they outlived their usefulness. Then they were long knives. They were wiped out. Well, the left looks at people like that, but they live in fear of them. They live in fear of them. They've let them become autonomous. Because, like I say, they love watching Frankenstein's monster ravage the city, the village, from on top of the castle. Just sooner or later, he returns home. I have a clip here from Texas, as a matter of fact. This is a professor down there. There's some bleeps in this. It's funny video in that it is the police coming through and saying, okay, you guys, you don't have a right to be here. And people are saying, well, they're violating their free speech right. No, you can speak whatever you want. You don't have a right to be somewhere. right? If an area closes at a certain time, like a park closes at dusk, at midnight, you don't have a right to be in there no matter what you're protesting. You don't have a right to be there. The rules, the laws say get out, dusk. Nobody's infringing on your First Amendment rights by enforcing existing law. You don't have a right to set up camp on the grounds of the University of Texas. You just don't. You can march all around, but when they say, hey, the school's closing, we're closing this area, they have an absolute right to do that. You need to get your ass out of there or you face the consequences. Now, for a lot of these people, being arrested and having a mugshot for protesting against Zionism, it's a badge of honor. Hell, they run home immediately and put it atop their resume. But this professor, she is not going along with the, hey, we're clearing this area, move along. And guess what happens? She gets arrested. Why? Because, well, she's disobeying the lawful order of a police officer and not removing herself from an area that was being closed off. She seems to think that because she's a professor, she is immune from this, from the law. It does not work. What do we hear every time any leftist on MSNBC talks about Donald Trump? No one is above the law. No one is above the law. There's no, unless you're a college professor at the end of it, unless you're a committed liberal at the end of it, even though it seems like it, and so many of the people in power, in academia anyway, let them get away with it. That poop don't fly in Texas. So this is your sort of Zen feel-good moment of the day. You can envision it as this professor is taken to the ground and her arms are put behind her back and she is cuffed. It is the administration of justice to somebody who thought they were above it all. I am a professor. I am a professor of economics. Well, then you understand the concept of your mouth writing a check that your butt can't cash, right? Because I think you just did that. Like, what is she? I'm a professor. Are they supposed to go, oh, then sorry. I didn't see your professor badge there. Go back to violating the law, please do. Reminds me of, if you've ever seen the god-awful movie Eyes Wide Shut. Stanley Kubrick deserved a better last movie. If you like nudity, very attractive people, full nude, then Eyes Wide Shut is for you. If you like coherent stories that aren't stupid, Eyes Wide Shut is not for you. But throughout the movie, Tom Cruise, who plays a doctor, is running around, and he's like, you can't go in there. You can't do this. You can't. He pulls out this thing. I don't know what the hell it is. It looks like an FBI badge thing, sort of like an FBI identity. Except he shows it every, no, I'm a doctor. Like he carries around his foldable, wallet-sized medical license or whatever. Now, instead of going, so what? I don't care. Everybody he shows it to is like, not a ton, like three different times, I'm a doctor. Immediately, everybody steps back and goes, oh, okay, well, then go ahead. Go. You can't go into that area. It's all right, I'm a doctor. Oh, please, well, then go ahead. It's where we keep the nuclear waste, but you're a doctor. It's where we keep all the gold, but you're a doctor, so please go right in there. You're in the coroner's office. I'm a doctor. Well, I don't know if you understand how a coroner's office works, doctor, but you're too late, right? It's too late. There's nothing you can, literally nothing you can do in there. All right? We run 10,000 volts through any of them. It's not going to make it. It's too damned late. But in the movie, he gets away with it. I'm a doctor. Oh, please, then right this way. Whereas in real life, screaming, I'm a professor. I'm a professor of economics. I don't care. You're not immune. Get out of here or get arrested. And there's always these people, the screamer there. You're a fascist. You're Hitler. You're this. You're that. That guy should be taken down next. Like, honestly, if you've ever seen an area cleared, and I have seen areas cleared as a member of the press, and I've seen protests and all this stuff. Most people will go, all right, well, I don't want to get arrested. Let's just go. And they'll leave. Those people walk at a normal people walking pace away from the area. Then there are those people, and it's kind of like if you told your kid they've got to clean up. And then they get to, you know, whatever, you got to clean up. You're going to have dinner, but before dinner, you got to clean up. And like, ugh. Or after dinner, they got to clean up. Ugh. They do it slowly. They do it very slowly. The people who are, they love to test the boundaries. You know, clean your plate. And they do it very, my oldest sister, I don't remember this. I don't even know if I was born yet or not. But she was just in a mood. Everybody in our family at one point or another, you test the limits, kids do. And she refused to eat her spaghetti. She was not going to eat her spaghetti. She didn't want to eat her spaghetti. She's slow walking, one noodle at a time. This is the story I've been told. One noodle at a time, not interested. And my dad said, eat your damn spaghetti. I don't want to eat spaghetti. Dad said, if you don't eat the spaghetti, put your face in it. She tested the limits, and she found out where the limit was, and she had her face shoved into this plate of spaghetti. She didn't like it. She ate her spaghetti after that. People always test those limits, and the people who test those limits are always shocked when they find it, right? Let's find out where this limit is. How much will they take? And then you find it like, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It's the same type of person who sits there and gets in your face. And you go ahead. You want to scream and yell. You want to hit me? Go ahead and hit me. I dare you to hit me. You're this. You're that. And then somebody hits them. And their reaction isn't to go, all right, it's on. Their reaction is always the biggest person going, you got to hit me. And you hit them. And they go, I can't believe you hit me. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to call the police. I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. Like, you were 2 inches from my face screaming at me that you think I'm a this, that, or the other thing, threatening me and daring me to hit you. All I did was take you up on the offer. At a certain point, you reached that limit. So the people clearing the area, most walked away. And then there's the people who walk really slow. They're the people who walk and then stop. They wait, and the police come to keep moving. And they, all right, nudge them along. Like, okay, they want to be pushed by the police. You guys are fascist, push. You guys are terrible. And then there are people who just move too slowly. And that's what happened. You found the line. Congratulations. That's what this professor did. She found the line. Okay, you're going to drag your ass out of here and go, not leave, not follow a lawful order from police officers. You're going down. And every single time one of these people find the line, they go, oh, my God, I can't believe it. And there's always the narrator. You're a fascist. You're a monster. You're a fascist. How could you do this? I want that to be a ringtone. I want this woman screaming, I'm a professor. I'm an economics professor, to be a ringtone. And I want it to be a ringtone of somebody who calls me often so that I hear it a lot. Because it is the administration of justice, what you heard there, something far too long absent from these college campuses. People facing consequences. For the first time in their lives, possibly, up at Columbia University, there are students who likely have never faced consequences for anything in their lives. The children of the wealthy, the children of the privileged. And I know the left loves to talk about privilege, but only in terms of skin color. They don't care that, you know, the kid of a skilled tradesman, that is white privilege. Somebody who was a manual laborer, ditch digger. Oh, their children, they're white privilege. Meanwhile, wealthy, non-white kids, no, they're oppressed. They don't have the advantages that the kid who got a horrible education in high school, public school education, whose parents can't afford to send him to college. They don't have the advantages that that kid does. I promise you, that kid would trade positions with you in a heartbeat. Living in Central Park West in a three-story apartment, and you talk about how oppressive it is out there for people with your skin melanin level. I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think so. Go to Dundalk. Go to go to any major city controlled by Democrats in the areas that aren't frequented by tourists, and you will find a different scenario. Privilege is about socioeconomic status. It is not about skin color. Victimhood is a false argument. We've monetized and prioritized a victim status to the point that it is now sought after. Something that should be an embarrassment. Overcoming something is no longer good enough unless you are of the right ethnicity, but realistically you're not, because Clarence Thomas's kids, Thomas Sowell's kids, they would not get the same leeway, the same understanding as the Obama daughters would. Why? The Obama daughters are richer. They are more privileged. One of them's getting jobs in Hollywood. You getting jobs in Hollywood? No real qualifications, but are you getting heads of studios cutting deals with your parents and offering you jobs in the process? Sounds pretty damn privileged to me, but I'm crazy like that. Now I'm going to shift gears to the leader of the group at Columbia. It's probably going to be stepping down soon. I thank God that cell phones didn't exist when I was in high school. And college, I guess they did to a certain extent, but I remember my friend Skip's dad had the first cell phone I ever used. It was bolted to the dashboard of his work truck. It's corded to the, I don't know how it worked, but I know I made my first phone call and I called my parents only to tell them that I was calling from a car. That was it. It was a thrill. Little did I know that everybody would have these little radiation machines shoved in their pockets near their groins, and we're all wondering, why is the birth rate so low? But that's for another story. But back then, cell phones, you literally had to, like, if you took it out of the car, it had a shoulder strap, you could beat somebody to death with it, and it probably would have stood up to it. It's also more reliable. It's also very radioactive, but that's beside the point. Now they all have cameras. Everybody is Johnny on the spot, Action Jackson, filming everything that's going on. You can, you know, some people, if you didn't post a picture of your meal on Facebook, did you really eat it? If your Instagram isn't updated three times a day, people assume that you've been kidnapped or something. Something's horribly wrong. They'll send out a search party. But it's a different world now, and I'm so glad that I didn't have social media when I was a kid, because I know I would have said something stupid. I know I'm sure I've said stupid things in my life, and it's just gone into the ether, but there's something weirdly seductive about social media and the ability to have an audience while you're alone. That's the thing. Everybody has weird thoughts and does things. Everybody's danced naked. Everybody has. Nobody wants the world to see it. And now they're like, well, now I'm the dance naked guy on TikTok. Follow me. I'm up to 100,000 followers. It is a weird thing that you can do something in private that you would really or say in private with nobody there, but the world can still see it. And there's this whole generation who thinks that they have to live that way. And so you'd have these innermost thoughts. And you can be like the woman who was going to South Africa and said, oh, go to South Africa. I hope I don't get AIDS. Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm white. And make a joke to, I think she had like 200 friends following her on Twitter. And by the time she landed, Justine, whatever her name was, by the time she landed in South Africa, 18 hours later, or whatever it was, she was the top story on the planet Earth, and her life was ruined. And like, what the hell happened there? It's a combination of boredom, slow news day, evil, and cynicism on a level that even I am in awe of. So you look at the current generation and you watch people be ruined because of tweets they sent in high school. You know, high school. 10 years ago, if you were in high school, it was only 2015, right? I was getting married in 2015. I had a Twitter account since 2009 or 8, and I'm sure you can find some horrible things in there, some stupid things, some really funny things and pearls of wisdom like you wouldn't believe, and everybody should, you know, subscribe and follow and pay and all that good stuff. But you can't be a human being and not do or say something stupid or offensive to somebody. We used to have a little bit of grace as a species and look at people and go, well, you're 15. That's what 15-year-olds do. You're supposed to do something. You're supposed to get all that stupid out of it. You can learn by two ways, doing it and screwing up firsthand, or watching somebody else do it and screw up for, you know, secondhand and go, well, I don't want to do that. You can find out the stove is hot by touching it and getting hurt, or watching somebody else touch it and get hurt. But you learned. Now there's the watch an idiot lick the stove channel, I'm sure, out there. Or if not, if you start it, I want 10%. Because I'm sure it will be gold. So this generation now has everything out online. And one thing about putting everything out online, especially if you're an activist, a progressive activist, is you can convince yourself, because you have been preached for a very long time by people in positions of authority, professors, teachers, sometimes clergy, activists, people you want to emulate, that your cause is righteous, your cause is just. And somehow, no matter what you do in pursuit of that cause is okay. You can't, if your cause is righteous, you can't do anything wrong in pursuit of it. Maybe murder, but that would be about it. And so threatening people, sabotaging things, creating fake hate crimes and the like. You saw this after Trump took office in 2016, right here in Silver Spring, Maryland, where the gay organist at the church, he discovered that somebody had written homophobic slurs all over the church. Oh my God, can you believe it? It's that Donald Trump. He's just terrible. He's inspiring all of this. And then it turns out that they found the paint in the trunks of the car, of that guy's car. That guy did it. That guy did it out of malice, but that guy thought he could get it. He felt justified in doing it because he knew. He knew that that hatred that he wrote existed somewhere out there. He just couldn't find it. And so he wanted to draw attention to it by exposing it, even if it was him who was doing it. A rational person might go, maybe it's not as bad as we thought then. Hey, maybe it's not as rampant as we thought in that case. But we're not dealing with rational people. We're dealing with people who are largely emotional rather than rational and logical. That brings us to Kimani James. Kimani James, you heard him the other day on the show where he's like, let's mic check. Let's get in line. There are Zionists among us at Columbia University, and they formed a human chain to march towards the Jews, or kids with the Jewish stars on their necklaces, in the camp. Marched towards them to invite them to leave through intimidation the camp. That's what they wanted. That's what they did. One step at a time. Step forward. Another step forward. What was terrifying is not that some weirdo decided to try to do this. What was terrifying was that he was able to form a rather large line of people willing to comply without question, just blind obedience. Oh my God, there's a Jew on here. All right, let's get together. And then make no mistake, that's what Zionist is code for. You're not dealing with people who are noted for their nuance in arguments here. And they marched arm in arm. We're against fascists as they goose-step one step forward and goose-step another step forward to chase the Jews out of Poland. Like, no sense of irony or understanding of history. Well, it turns out that Kamani James has a long history, even before these protests, of not liking Jews, not liking white people, not liking anybody who isn't a marginalized minority. Now, it's weird how these leftists always justify this. Like, if you just look at history, and I'm a Catholic guy, but if you look at history from an objective point of view, I'm not really sure you can come up with any group of human beings that has been more persecuted throughout all of human history than God's chosen people, the Jews. I don't see it. They're the OGs when it comes to oppression. But they get no credit for that. They get nothing. It's just straight up, they're the oppressors. You want to talk about people who are subjected to horrible racist stereotypes nonstop? You can start right there. But it's okay to the left, apparently. So anyway, Kamani James was saying that Zionists should be killed. I'm trying to think of a way to put it artfully, but that's what he said. And so Columbia University decided that they needed to launch an investigation to find out whether or not Kamani James was actually going to kill Zionists. And he had to do a Zoom call in January as part of the investigation. Now, the investigator is a woman of color who happens to be a lesbian. They sent out the diversity police to find out whether or not Kamani James, who's also a person of color, and I believe he uses he, she, they pronouns. I don't know what the hell that means other than absolute total confusion, and mommy and daddy probably didn't pay enough attention to him as a kid. Or maybe they either smacked him too much or not enough. I don't know. But he had to have this conversation with school investigators, and he decided to film it. Again, it is the world of, if I don't Instagram this meatloaf, did I really eat it? He videotaped this, he plays to the camera, and he posted it online himself for the world to see. Now he's all like, oh my God, I can't believe people are digging up these horrible things. You put it out there, dude. It's like being mad at the libs of TikTok account. Like, all this person is doing is finding things that people post publicly to a relatively small audience and saying, look at what this person has posted publicly to a large audience. And then going, oh my God, I can't believe that. It's like somebody screaming in a field a whole bunch of racial slurs by themselves. And then you run up there and put a megaphone in front of their mouth. And they're still saying the same stuff. Like, oh my God, can you believe? What are you doing? You're screaming it, dude. All I'm doing is pointing out what you're screaming. Anyway, listen to Kamani. This is there's going to be three cuts here. The first one is Kamani James talking to the investigator about whether or not he actually does want to kill a bunch of Jews.
My name is Sasha Lakadaway. I'm one of the associate directors in the Center for Student Success and Intervention.
I'm Kamani James. I use he, she, they pronouns. Zionists in my DM wanting to meet up and fight. I don't fight to injure or for there to be a winner or a loser. I fight to kill. See y'all in New York, January 2024.
Mm-hmm. So that's specifically what we're going to be discussing today. Do you see why that's problematic in any way?
No.
Do you think that there's a serious weight in taking someone else's life?
I think there is a serious weight in taking someone's life. And at the same time, I think that taking someone's life in certain case scenarios is necessary and better for the overall world. And so I personally have never killed anyone. Thank the Lord that no one has put me in that position. Though when Hitler died, the world rejoiced. Everyone looks back at that time period and said that Hitler needed to die because he was exacting an immense amount of harm against the world. And so just like that, during the Haitian Revolution, Haitian slaves had to kill their masters in order to gain their independence. These were masters who were white supremacists. What is a Zionist? A white supremacist. And so let's be very clear here. I'm not saying that I'm going to go out and start killing Zionists. What I'm saying is that if an individual who identifies as a Zionist threatens my physical safety in person, i.e. puts their hands on me, I am going to defend myself. And in that case scenario, it may come to a point where I don't know when to stop. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying.
Uh-huh. Does he sound lovely? I might have to kill somebody. I might have to kill somebody. I don't know. But a Zionist, these Zionists, and you sit there and you go, how the hell did this guy get into Colombia in the first place, don't you? Isn't that your first thought? Like, we're always told, I tell you, I've met a lot of people from impressive schools. Very infrequently am I impressed by people who've gone to impressive schools. You can be educated beyond your intelligence. So maybe this guy like tests off the charts as far as intelligence, or maybe he's a legacy. Sounds like he comes from money ultimately. And if you donate enough money, you can get even your spastic wanting to commit genocide kid into any university if you know the right people and you grease the right palms. But you sit there and you listen to this, and you can see why the university is a little bit concerned. No, it's justified. If it's a Zionist who doesn't want to, somebody comes up to me and identifies as a Zionist. Now, what do you identify as a, like, he's using it as code for Jew. If a Jew comes up to me and puts their hands on me, then I will lose my mind. I'll lose my feces, and I can't be responsible for, I would be completely justified in killing this person if a Jew came up to me and put their hands on me. Now, what's bizarre or sad or however you want to look at it is after this investigation, Colombia apparently said, okay, we're good. We're satisfied. He's not going to be a problem. Like, this dude seems like the very definition of a problem. If you overheard this conversation in the dining hall at your dorm, you'd probably move away from them. If you heard this through the walls of your dorm, this, anybody talking like this, you might go, this guy could snap at any moment. I kind of want to switch rooms. I want to get the hell out of here. I'm certainly going to avoid this person. And yet, when Colombia, quote unquote, mobilized, this guy was the tip of the spear. Mindlessly, this is the difference between individuals and group. The group follows this guy, or followed. I don't know what the current status is. And it's the perfect encapsulation of the line from Men in Black, which I cite it all the time. And normally you wouldn't think you could make a good argument about Men in Black related to politics, but Will Smith just finds out that aliens exist. He's sitting there in the park bench with Tommy Lee Jones, who's recruiting him into Men in Black. And Will Smith says, why? I don't understand the secrecy. Why do we? People are smart. People can handle this. Why don't we tell them? And Tommy Lee Jones says something to the effect of, the person is smart. People are dumb, stupid, scared, easily manipulated. It is. Individually, I bet you talk to anybody, almost anybody in this crowd, there'd be a lot of people who share this sentiment, but a lot of people, when you talk to them individually and you explain, hey, what does from the river to the sea mean? I think that means there should be a two-state solution. No. It's closer to a solution part. I think instead of two-state, you're more along the lines of chanting for what would be termed a final solution, just to put it in popular vernacular, but they probably wouldn't understand that reference either. But you get them into a group of people, and they'll chant anything you want. There's a Zionist without realizing what a Zionist is. Oh, there's a Zionist here. Oh, there's a boogeyman. What is that code for? What is that code? I bet you ask people what a Zionist is, what the definition of Zionism is. They probably wouldn't know that it has anything to do with Judaism. But they'll get up, link arms, take the order, one step forward. Okay, one step forward. Another step forward. Oh, we're fighting for justice here. What are you doing? You're playing a stupid game of Red Rover to try and converge on a couple of Jewish students who have just as much right to be there as you do, but you don't like them, right? The Star of David necklace, the yarmulke, the yellow Star of David sewn to the lapel. The people you're following have the same reaction to all of those things. And they don't seem to know that, or they don't care. I don't know which is worse, but neither is good. Now we move to Kamani James, leader of the student-led protests against Israel's existence, ultimately, talking about his love of Zionists.
There should not be Zionists anywhere. Zionists are Nazis.
For my identity as a Black queer woman in New York City, obviously, if I'm on the train and I'm sexually assaulted or harassed in some way, like, I may sit and slap somebody, right? Doing and saying that versus saying that, you know, you fight to kill. And you made a comment earlier where you stated that you may not know your own strength behind why, or you may not have the resistance to stop. Right? That is kind of like what I'm taking from what you were sharing, that it could get to that point.
Okay, both of them have taken a break, everyone. So these are two Black women. I just wanted to throw that out there. So I'm not too keen on going too, but these are two Black women in the meeting, just in case y'all couldn't tell already. But these are two Black women. The meeting's a joke. They definitely were hoping that I was going to walk back the I fight to kill. Your initial letter from your office mentioned that this meeting will determine if it needs to reach or go to a disciplinary hearing. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'll be being notified about in 24 to 48 hours.
That, and it can also be that we need additional information. All of our letters are standard, so it depends on kind of like everything that you disclosed to us today and what we discussed.
Right. Okay, then. Well, thank you.
No problem.
A lot of people agree that Hitler needed to die in order for world order to move forward and in order to establish some inkling of world peace. And so if we can agree as a society, as a collective, that people, that person, some persons need to die if they have an ideology that results in the death of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. If there are people like that who exist, shouldn't they die? Why would we want people who are supporters of genocide to live? I'm confused.
Why would we want them to live? He is the result of teachers unions. He is a result of progressive politics. I suspect that if you checked Kamani James's DVR, you would find that he is making sure that that thing records every episode of Rachel Maddow's show. Every single one of them. She may not be as so on the nose as Kamani is, but Kamani has the ability to read between the lines, right? After all, Rachel Maddow did inspire James Hodgkins. She was a dedicated Rachel Maddow viewer, dedicated Bernie bro. In fact, Kamani James's Twitter bio reads, he's 20, anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, student and educator, supporting and teaching liberation everywhere, and then all in caps lock, Free Palestine, with the little emoji of the Palestinian flag. So you know he's totally for serious. Totally. For serious. He released a statement about these videos that I'll get to in a second, but we have one more little nuggets of wisdom to get to from Kamani James. And you, by the way, he was still and now who knows what Columbia will do to him ultimately after leading these protests, probably give him a doctorate and tenure, but he was apparently cleared by this investigation, as this video is from the first week of January. So that means that Columbia looked into his calls for, I might kill some Zionists just because they stepped to me and said, probably no Zionists will step to him, so we don't have to worry about that. How's that working out?
Zionists, along with all white supremacists, need to not exist because they actively kill and harm vulnerable people. They stop the world from progressing. Oh, okay. Thank you. What? Thank you. And so, be glad, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. I've never murdered anyone in my life, and I hope to keep it that way. That meeting was so dumb. I actually kind of hope they do kick me out, because I've been meaning to travel to South America. Obviously, the United States would never support the murder of Netanyahu, but imagine how many lives would be saved possibly, right? Because we all know that the replacement will probably, but, you know, philosophically speaking, the death of a maniacal genocidist like Netanyahu in Israel, his death would theoretically mean that many people would live. Zionists, they don't deserve to live comfortably, let alone Zionists don't deserve to live. The same way we're very comfortable accepting that Nazis don't deserve to live, fascists don't deserve to live, racists don't deserve to live, Zionists, they shouldn't live in this world. If we're truly in it, and if we're truly living life and living in this world in order to achieve peace, the existence of Nazis, white supremacists, Zionists, these are all the same people. The existence of them and the projects they have built, i.e. Israel, it's all antithetical to peace. It's all antithetical to peace. And so, yes, I feel very comfortable calling for those people to die. And with that being said, Kamani is signed out. See you in New York real soon.
He sounds mentally stable, doesn't he? But he's a leader in the Columbia anti-Zionist, pro-Palestinian, Jew-hating Nazi movement. I love it. When you trust him to make the decisions, he wants to be able to choose to who lives and dies. It's racist. Who's a racist? Well, anybody who displeases Kamani James, obviously. Who's a Zionist? I don't even know if he knows what a Zionist is, but he's really just sitting there going, we should kill all the Jews. Nazis were terrible. We should finish their work. Wait a second, Kamani. Do you not understand history? I get that you're only 20 years old and you're really incredibly stupid, but these are dots that I think a newborn would be able to connect. But you can't, because you've probably never been held to a standard in your life, and you've likely never been expected to critically think in your life. Kamani James, now that he's, you know, leading this charge, and this video was discovered that he posted online, nobody hacked into anything and took it, he released a statement about what he said there. There's no mea culpa in this, right? Put it on Twitter. And he says, read my statement below. Okay. On Thursday, I guess I could do it in Kamani's voice. On Thursday, a video of me taken back in January began to circulate online. What I said was wrong. Every member of our community deserves to feel safe without qualification. I also want people to have more context for my words, which I regret. Far-right agitators went through my months of social media feed until they found a clip that they edited without context. I love these people who go, oh, it's context. It's context. Okay, give me the context in which you calling for the elimination of the State of Israel is. You put it in a context. Put it in any context where it suddenly goes, oh, yeah, now I see what you mean. Oh, you want to kill people? Okay, put that in context. Okay, now it makes sense. Did you feel as though anything was taken out of context? Did you come away going, I'm still not sure what he's advocating there for, because it was so cut up and out of context? When I recorded it, I had been feeling unusually upset after an online mob targeted me because I am visibly queer and black. Oh, it's of course, it's the victimhood. Excuse me while I nail myself to the cross. Unfortunately, this is not my first time being targeted by online trolls and harassed by people who use racist and homophobic slurs. F got monkey and worse. In an effort to intimidate student protesters like myself. QAD, I don't know what QAD is, Columbia University, whatever, Action Dorks or something, who knows. And the Gaza Solidarity Encampment have made clear that my words in January, prior to my involvement in the protests, are not in line with community guidelines. I agree with their assessment. I've investigated myself, and I've determined I've done nothing wrong. Those words do not represent the protest. They also do not represent me. Well, then who do they represent? Where is it up the rectum, or is there a second slot where people can put their hands and control your mouth? Because you said these things, right? You did it. Is your dorm roommate a ventriloquist, and you're a high-grade narcoleptic who can have their eyes taped open and their mouth moved remotely and voices thrown into you? I don't think so. What I said does not represent me. Okay, that's pretty weird. Not sure how that works. Here's what I wish I had said in the video that is circulating of me. You read this and you go, "What? How did this guy get into Columbia?" I affirm the sanctity of all life and the movement for liberation. This applies to all people, regardless of their race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, or nationality. Forget what you just heard me say in that video. I now recognize that I'm facing consequences for the first time in my life, so I'm going to declare what I said, not what I said, not what I meant. It's totally different, and just go about my day. Two, Zionism is an ideology that necessitates the genocide of the Palestinian people. I oppose that in the strongest terms. Yeah, he's super sorry, and all he just said in that video is not what he meant to say, but let me repeat some of it again. Three, all people deserve to be safe from physical harm. Palestinians have been subjected to decades of brutal violence and now genocide by Israel. Yeah, Israel sucks at genocide, by the way. Considering the last 10 years, the population of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank is, I believe, tripled. There's something wrong with, you don't understand what genocide is. The Israeli government and the military should be held accountable for their actions. Well, that was why you wanted to kill them all, Kimani. That's pretty unambiguous. I am frustrated that words I said in an Instagram Live video have become a distraction from the movement for Palestinian liberation. I misspoke in the heat of the moment, for which I apologize. By the way, the entire video is apparently an hour and a half long. That's a hell of a misspeak. I misspoke for an hour and a half solid about how those damn Jews are ruining everything and how Israel needs to be wiped out and white people and Jews are all the same. And oh, okay, yeah. My focus remains on drawing attention to the plight of the Palestinian people and the ongoing genocide in Gaza. I remain committed to learning and building a better, more just world for all of us. Well, I mean, not all of us, right? Come on. not all of us, right? Not the people you said deserved. There's a lot of wiggle room in things. This guy will probably go to, if he goes to law school, he will learn how to say the same things with a lot of wiggle room. He'll go to the Bill Clinton School of Law where it's like, well, it depends on the meaning of what the word is. You know, they've been saying there is, like, is she currently on her knees right now? No, she's not. But yesterday, hell yeah, I got the video to show it. Never felt like I was alone. There are other people on the planet. I knew that when we were in the Oval Office with the doors locked and nobody could come in, that we were not alone because other human beings existed. You get to that point of the weaselly lawyering and you go, okay. I believe that Israel has a right to exist. I just don't think. No, don't say Jews. Not Zionists. Right-wing extremists. Don't call for the murder of Benjamin Netanyahu again. I believe that the Netanyahu government should resign and there should be new elections held. Okay, now you sound just like Nancy Pelosi. Wait a second. Might there be a connection? Why, yes. Yes, I would say that there probably is. Make no mistake, as people try to distance themselves from what they proudly spewed online, not when they were, 10 years old and got a hold of an internet connection for the first time, but just 3 months ago, proudly posted themselves, because when nobody was paying attention to Kamani James, his small circle, this gave him straight cred. This made him a hero. This made him a leader in the student movement for Palestine on the College of Columbia. Now that the rest of the world took note, suddenly he's like, I did not mean what I said. I am not the person I proclaimed myself to be. My words were taken out of context, even though the whole context is right there. Yeah. I'm not sure that Kamani, well, he'd probably, frankly, get a tenured position at Columbia University if he graduated. He's definitely on a tenure track somewhere. Either that or after a keynote address at this year's Democratic National Convention in Chicago, he will then decide that he wants to be the next mayor of New York or something. Yeah. Laugh now, but 10 years ago, if you had thought that somebody like this would be in a leadership position anywhere, you'd be anywhere except, you'd be like, that guy'd be run off campus. That guy'd be thrown out of polite society. Nope. This guy will be a fill-in host on MSNBC by the end of the weekend. In the remaining time we have two stories here that just crack me up. Crack me up. First, the New York Post headline, inside the failed White House coup to oust Biden press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. She's so historic. So historic. Top aides, they write, to President Biden secretly hatched a plan this past fall to replace White House press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre by recruiting outside allies to nudge her out the door, the Post has learned. Karine Jean-Pierre, who made history in May 2022 by becoming the first black and openly gay person to hold the position, she's also an immigrant, so like a threefer, had developed the exasperating habit of reading canned answers directly from a binder to reporters at her regular press briefings, offering what her superiors viewed as a less than compelling pitch for the 81-year-old Biden as he readied for his reelection campaign. Not only does she read it, she nods along with it, she looks down, and she uses gold eyeshadow most of the time. Sometimes it's blue eyeshadow, but whatever it is, it just highlights the fact that she's not looking at anybody, that she's looking down. It makes it look like her eyes are closed. That's why I think that she should paint fake eyeballs on her eyelids. It'd be much easier, much more compelling. Are you looking at me? Are you blinking? Are you sleeping? Are you staring at me intently and winning a stare down? I don't know what's going on. But you notice that she's looking down and reading. The de facto White House communications chief, Anita Dunn, 66, wife of Biden personal attorney Bob Bauer, told colleagues that she had decided to call in prominent Democrats to explain to Jean-Pierre, 49, that the time was ripe for her to move on, sources told the Post. Quote, there were a number of people she asked to engage Karine, said one source who heard of the strategy directly from Dunn, whose role as senior advisor has been filled during the past three presidencies by Jared Kushner, Valerie Jarrett, and Karl Rove. So she's the brains of the operation. The source told the Post that Dunn had claimed White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients knew about and supported the cloak and dagger scheme to push Jean-Pierre out of the West Wing. Quote, there was an effort to have some outside folks who Karine knows and trusts talk to her about why leaving last fall would have made a lot of sense for her and her career, calling it an effort to encourage her to move along and nudging, inviting her to leave. Hey, you know what would be great? Hey, I look at what fell out of this newspaper. It's the want ads. Or, hey, here's my agent's number who got me, my friend of mine, a job at MSNBC. Maybe you should take that. Jean-Pierre, the person added, quote, had been in the job for a year and a half at that point, which is a pretty standard tenure for a press secretary in what is admittedly a very demanding job. And Jeff and Anita tried to have folks that she would listen to and trust talk to her about why it might be wise to do that. She wouldn't take the hint. Now, I love that there's a huge diversity issue here. This is another quote from a source. There's a huge diversity here, and they're afraid that folks are going to say that they got rid of a black woman, a black lesbian, immigrant. And it's just not good. The revelation of Dunn's play is likely to make it more awkward for workplace dynamics, the source said. She's been pretty inconsistent in telling people, or pretty consistent in telling people from the minute she got at the job, but she was going to stay through the election. I think Karine has just decided to stay come hell or high water, and that's that. Now, this is my favorite part, because they talk about how horrible she is at the job. It's one thing. When conservatives point it out, that can just be dismissed as pish-posh. That's what conservatives do. I don't know how anybody can objectively look at what she does on a daily basis. And like when it's a serious matter, they bring in John Kirby because he can think on his feet. She can't. She won't. Press secretaries get to be in on the meetings and then could have firsthand knowledge, and good ones will be able to discern what should be public and what shouldn't be public, and they'd be able to speak from experience and knowledge. She doesn't do that. Said, while Jean-Pierre isn't going anywhere, the issues that brought about Dunn's failed machinations remain, with both sources saying the press secretary is too reliant on notes to provide the pushback and quick-thinking repartee needed to effectively champion Biden's cause. Quote, Karine doesn't have an understanding of the issues, and she reads the binder word for word, said the second source, adding that the situation is made worse by the fact that, quote, she thinks she's doing an amazing job. Another person said, she doesn't have a grasp of the issues, and she doesn't spend the time to learn. There are issues that are not second nature to people. Israel, Gaza, a perfect example. She doesn't understand the nuance. There's an enormous amount of work that goes into getting ready, and consistently, she does not put in that level of work. See, this is all presupposing that she was hired based on merit. She was not hired based on merit. She was hired to check the boxes so that every profile of her, and Lord knows there have been many gushy profiles, could be glowing and talk about how Joe Biden is so wonderful and so trailblazing and such. It's a joke. Now they're stuck with her. They can't fire her. Same reason they can't dump Kamala Harris. Because, oh my God, you dropped a black woman. How dare you? Doesn't matter that she's less popular than Biden. Maybe the only politician in the country less popular than Biden. And then you go over to Axios. Now you could say, well, the New York Post, conservative, right wing, whatever. Axios, you cannot. Their headline, scoop, : Biden changes walking routine to Marine One. What? President Biden has introduced a change to his White House departure and return routine. Instead of walking across the South Lawn to and from Marine One by himself, he's now often surrounded by aides. With aides walking between Biden and journalists' camera positions outside the White House, the visual effect is to draw less attention to the 81-year-old's halting and stiff gait. He walks like a Clydesdale going through mud. The knees come up weirdly high because I think he's afraid of catching his toes on something. And his arms barely move. They barely move because he's focused so much on not falling. All his concentration is below the waist. Some Biden advisors have told Axios they're concerned that videos of Biden walking and shuffling alone, especially across the grass, have highlighted his age. Weeks ago, the president told aides that he prefers a less formal approach, a White House official told. He suggests that they walk with him. White House staffers and reporters alike noticed the sudden change in Biden's walk routine beginning in mid-April after more than 3 years in which he typically walked solo. Senior aides such as Deputy Chiefs of Staff Bruce Reed and Annie Thomasoni, whatever, and close advisor Mike Donlin are among those who've walked with the president across the lawn to and from the helicopter. Since the change, some advisors think the images of Biden's walk to and from the helicopter are better, and they expect him to continue to have aides join him. Can you imagine? What do you got to do today? You want to go to lunch? I would go to lunch. President's due back at any time, and I have to run out to Marine One, make sure he doesn't trip, try to distract, form a ring of protection around him, and get him to walk the, I don't know, half a football field into the thing, and then I can go to lunch. In March, Biden's 5 walks to and from Marine One of the White House were by himself or with family members. Starting April 16th, Biden was joined by staff or lawmakers 9 out of 10 times he walked to and from Marine One. Andrew Bates, White House spokesperson, downplayed the significance of aides partially obscuring the camera's views of Biden as he walks. Quote, he's fully visible except for a few seconds, he said. Yeah, they're distracted. Can't distract. Old is old. Get over it. All right, that is enough. And if it sounds weird, I don't have my microphone right now. The kids ran off with the microphone, so I'm going to wrap it up without that. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow. Thanks for listening. See you then.